Welcome to a podcast from Clever to Wise Productions. Join me on my journey from clever to wise, where we explore our connectedness to a conscious universe. You can follow my regular social media posts, which are predominantly on Facebook, by searching for hashtag CLEVER, the number 2, WISE. That's hashtag Clever to Wise. If you'd like to sign up for my occasional blogs, or to find podcasts like this, or to check out my book, or to participate in the free Blessings Co-op, go to www.clevertowise.com. Hi, this is Bob Cochran, welcoming you to my very first podcast, where my goal is to provide an overview of both myself and my new book, which I've called Emerging Imaginal You. I've approached this podcast in a Q&A format, which enables me to respond in advance to the types of questions that listeners are most likely to ask. First, I'd like to say how grateful I am for this opportunity to share with you today. I know that the title, Emerging Imaginal You, doesn't exactly roll off the tongue, but as we get further into this, hopefully the reasoning for it will become more and more apparent. My goal for today is to provide an overview of both myself as an author and the book. First, I'd like to provide a glimpse into how I as an author was maneuvered by life events from a starting place of viewing reality through the limited black and white lens of mainstream science to eventually arrive at the more complete, full-color view of reality available at the corner of science and spirituality. Given that as a context, I'd then like to provide an overview of this book, which was written from that intersection, hopefully in a way that allows listeners to gauge how it could potentially be a life-changing read. Let's start with a few words about my background. From the perspective of my logical left brain, I'm a retired engineer and inventor after 42 years with a prominent Silicon Valley tech giant. Much of that time was spent as an engineer and team lead in a computer research and development lab, where my name became associated with approximately 34 high-technology patents. From the perspective of my right brain self, I'm a graduate of massage school, Reiki master training, quantum touch energy training, and Bankston energy training. Although I once thought that the left brain and right brain parts of me would never really meet and cooperate very much, I eventually combined my left and right brain skills plus intuition in order to conduct some interesting experiments. These experiments involved successfully accessing and altering the past, the future, and objects at a distance. The results, which I found to be quite interesting, were published in a 2019 scientific journal. You might have noticed that science-only types sometimes find themselves becoming more spiritual, that is, suddenly living at the intersection of science and spirituality. This is often due more to undeniable experiences rather than any life plan. What this book details is a similar transformation in my life, which has made it increasingly obvious to me that an accurate scientific view of reality must take into account what can be learned from spirituality. When I was 16, living in the state of Nevada, my grandmother was living in the state of Oregon, and she was on hospice care in the last hours of her life, and so we were waiting to get the phone call that she had passed. At some point, it got late in the evening, and so my parents sent me to bed. After falling asleep for a while, I was awoken by a presence in my room, and I noticed this buzzing cloud at the foot of my bed and had white sparkles in it, and it became obvious to me that that was Grandma, and she had passed, and she was just saying goodbye on her way to her next great adventure. It hovered at the foot of my bed for maybe 20 seconds and then moved over to my brother's side of the room and hovered there for a little while, and then just migrated through the wall. I walked out to the front room to declare to my parents that grandmother had passed away, and they just discounted it and said, "Oh, you were just dreaming. Go back to bed." And then the phone rang. My takeaway from this experience was that we are apparently indestructible energy with temporary access to an avatar body. That is, we are eternal mind with temporary access to a brain. Secondly, I couldn't help but wonder why science had ill-prepared me for this experience. Later on in life, my remote viewing and remote Reiki experiences involved several instances of data collection and energy delivery at great distances through energetic entanglement. My takeaway from these experiences were that we live in a holographic universe where distance is an illusion, and that it's possible for people to often heal themselves, especially when offered supplemental energy and a wellness template. Again, I was perplexed as to why mainstream science had ill-prepared me for this experience. I've also had compelling experiences with interdimensional beings in various forms, including an angel I call Myriad, as in many, because she didn't seem to want to be confined to a single concept. My takeaway from experiences like this have been that we apparently share space around us with multidimensional realms and beings, sometimes seen, but mostly unseen. Again, I was perplexed as to why science had ill-prepared me for experiences like this. You may have heard the term bilocation, as in being in two places at once. Friends and family have told me on at least three occasions that, unbeknownst to me, I interacted with them in one location as I slept in some other location. Just like we don't always remember our dreams, these were significant people in my life, so it's quite likely I was thinking about them as I fell asleep. On one of these occasions, my physical body was asleep on an airplane in the process of flying between states, which didn't seem to deter my astral body from intervening in a heated argument my daughter was currently having with her spouse in another state. My takeaway from these experiences are that emotion plus intention can apparently alter what we think of as the normal laws of physics. Again, science had ill-prepared me for these experiences. I once participated in a group that traveled to Egypt to meditate for peace in the Middle East. On one particular Friday afternoon, we were allowed private access to both the Queen and King's Chamber deep within the Great Pyramid on the Giza Plateau. Our only sources of light were little tea candles. Within the King's Chamber is a so-called sarcophagus that countless people have laid in, including Napoleon and Alexander the Great. After taking my turn laying in it, I sat down by the far wall to meditate for peace. At some point, people in our group explained that they could look up and see the Friday afternoon sky and clouds through hundreds of feet of stone from inside the King's Chamber. I looked up and all I could see was the ceiling. So I sat down against the wall, put my head down between my knees, and to my surprise, I could see the night sky through the planet. On the other side of the planet, I could see stars and clouds. That was very cool. My takeaway from this experience was that things are not nearly as solid as they first appear, and that, as later documented by Dr. William Tiller, once a space is charged by meditation and intention, that which normally can't take place may take place. Again, science had not adequately prepared me for this experience. Speaking of science, I'd like to make it clear that I am a big fan, especially when it's living up to its promise. Unfortunately, science all too often seems to lose its courage and integrity when it ignores findings that might impact special interests or contradict well-entrenched dogma. That's why people sometimes say that science has to progress one funeral at a time. In real science, when the prevailing theory can't explain unexpected or inconvenient data, instead of discounting the data, you improve the theory. One concept I refer to in the book is that of the red pill versus the blue pill. If you recall the 1999 film, The Matrix, Morpheus offers Neo a choice of a blue pill or a red pill. If he chose the blue pill, he would have been returned to his former life to join the sleepwalking masses, insulated from true reality. This would have been a choice of convenience over truth. On the other hand, choosing the red pill opted for truth over convenience. Quite simply, my book is for red pill people and calls for blue pill science to be upgraded to red pill science. For those who think science is obviously superior to spirituality and completely separate from it, let's look at the lineage that birthed science. First, here's my definition of spirituality. For tens of thousands of years, the continued pursuit of deeper and deeper understanding about higher and higher truths by way of contemplation and experiment. Now, let's compare my definition of science. For perhaps 300 years, the continued pursuit of deeper and deeper understanding about higher and higher truths by way of contemplation and experiment. Comparing the two this way, it becomes apparent that the two probably have more in common than most would like to admit, and that the differences often come down to just semantics. As it turns out, the similarities are with good reason. In fact, spiritual inquiry birthed philosophy, which birthed natural philosophy, which then birthed science. Scientific inquiry, as the great-grandchild of spiritual inquiry, shares a lot of common DNA with spirituality. Thus, science might have a few things to learn from spirituality, since as the mother of inquiry and discovery, spirituality has had an enormous head start. Perhaps when the two disagree, it's something like when a parent and child disagree because they're so much alike. Spiritual experiences such as I've described are not all that uncommon, so even though they contradict current mainstream scientific dogma, the data leads where the data leads. As someone who's made a living with intuition, I don't make this prediction lightly when I say that some extremely important breakthroughs will take place at the intersection of science and spirituality. This is one of the reasons why my book was written from that place. Now I'd like to talk a bit about my process and approach in writing this book called Emerging Imaginal You. As it turned out, this book was a 10-year labor of love in combination with an interdimensional being I refer to as my muse. If you have any experience with a genuine muse, I'd have to offer both my congratulations and condolences because on one hand, muses tend to deliver great ideas, while on the other hand, relentlessly prompting you to put those ideas into action. If you've ever been tapped on the leg relentlessly or stared at by a pet just before feeding time, you might get the general idea of what this was like, especially if that pet started in on you about 10 years before feeding time. You may have heard that writing a book takes more time and effort than you might expect. Personally, I found that to be quite the understatement. But then again, with a persistently pestering muse in the picture, not finishing the book never really seemed to be a serious option for me. One concept I employed in approaching this book was the notion of, if I could send a letter to my younger self, what would I say? Although this might have started out as a literary device, I eventually had enough success with altering the past that having this book actually delivered to my younger self became a serious intent. I eventually stopped doubting that the book would be delivered to my younger self in some timelines. I just didn't know if that would include my current timeline. As it turned out, within hours of hitting the publish button, I experienced noticeable upgrades and changes as if I had suddenly began my spiritual path years sooner. One change was to suddenly have a memory of a book-sized parcel wrapped in brown paper on the walkway leading up to what used to be my front door. So, perhaps it was delivered. Another important concept in the book was that of stacked premises. When a stage acrobat stacks chairs one on top of another and climbs to the top, how many of those chairs do you think need to be faulty or non-load-bearing before the whole stack comes crashing down? As it turns out, just one, any one. As the older me eventually discovered, the younger me built his life around premises on top of premises that were not nearly as load-bearing as he thought. So guess what? Pretty much every aspect of my life, when it was eventually placed under sufficient strain, came crashing down. Another concept used in the book was that of the process involved with a caterpillar becoming a butterfly. Everything seems fine for the caterpillar, that is, until it turns into goo, where it might feel its entire world is ending. Perhaps it's only the imaginal cells that know that the caterpillar's world is being dissolved as part of a grander plan, so that a butterfly might emerge. This is how I came to the title, Emerging Imaginal You. For anyone such as myself, who's come through what's called the dark night of the soul, this butterfly metaphor might seem all too familiar. The whole point of writing this book was so that it could be delivered to my decades younger, mid-30s self, just prior to my dark night of the soul, where pretty much everything in my tidy and well-constructed world dissolved around me. You might be asking yourself, what makes me think that it's reasonable and logical that this book could actually be delivered back in time to my younger self? Well, if you think about it, even if the invention of time travel takes another 10,000 years, you can bet that time-traveling historians and tourists will be visiting times and places of interest, like here and now. So, to whoever may have left that parcel on my front walkway, thank you. Although this book is intended for an audience of one, the younger me, it's also written in a way that can bring benefit to just about anyone, especially of the red pill variety. In the first section, which I've called Deconstruction, Welcome to the Goo, I identify my particular 16-level-deep stack of foundational life premises, and then use logic to test each one for their ability to hold up under load. As it turns out, few, if any, did. Although your particular premise stack might differ slightly, if you do take the trouble to go through the same exercise, you're likely to reach a very similar conclusion. Since these foundational life premises hold each other up, like stacked floors in a parking garage, how many do you think have to be faulty before you're eventually going to have a problem? Just one. Anyone. Thus, you can be forced to replace the faulty ones in the middle of a major life crisis, like me, or you can do it at your leisure. Having tried the first way, I really don't recommend it. This leads us to the next section, where we move from welcome to the goo to rebuilding for what's true, where improved load-worthy premises are substituted for the flawed ones. That leads to the next butterfly-themed section called Building Flight Muscles, where I lay a foundation for a more sustainable, reality-based life, lived at the intersection of science and spirituality. One important concept I refer to in the book is that of self-sovereignty. You might be asking yourself what I mean by that. A self-sovereign needs no one's permission to notice the extent to which their mind has probably been hacked by often well-intended hand-me-down narratives and pseudo-truths. Correcting the situation involves prioritizing capital T truth over narrative by way of their own research and intuition. Of course, some effort is involved, but then again, a free, self-sovereign mind doesn't come for free. A self-sovereign also likely makes use of unseen, universally available information and energy sources that most leave untapped. This leads us to the last two sections called A Self-Sovereign Is and A Self-Sovereign Does. Towards the end of the book, I use an ice hockey term, skate to the puck, in regards to how a self-sovereign might correctly anticipate coming societal changes. Let me expand on that. The term skate to the puck refers to the difference between good ice hockey players who skate to where the hockey puck seems to be going, as opposed to great players that intuitively skate to where the puck is actually headed. I invoke this metaphor in regards to an approaching societal wave that the more intuitive among us now see building and are calling the shift, which was the subject of my recent blog. What is called the shift is well worth noting, because, as with any wave, those that align with it get to surf it, while those who ignore it may be upended by it. The multi-generational wave that's building right now involves a new normal for integrity, transparency, fairness, tolerance, compassion, and cooperation. In short, our win-lose survival mode paradigm will increasingly be giving way to a beyond survival mode win-win paradigm. In the old win-lose energy, every thought and action had to be weighed against survival, or what thought or action most facilitates my continued existence. In the new beyond survival mode win-win energy, realizing that we're unharmable consciousness, so our continued existence is a given, every thought and action can then be weighed against what thought or action most facilitates staying in a place of peaceful balance, and allows the highest and best outcome for this body and planet. One person at a time, changing their mindset in this way, is exactly how personal and global conflict and drama become more and more rare. If you're looking for the why do I care, one reason is that this is how we make war obsolete. Another why do I care is that this shift is probably going to cause those who are invested in or employed by segments of society that rely on the old normal to have an increasingly rough ride. In short, after millennia of existing in the old dark energy, the balance has finally shifted from us having to buck a strong wind of darkness towards an increasingly strong wind of light that's actually at our back. This is a game changer. Those that first sense this shift can benefit the most, from resetting their proverbial sails sooner, while those of compassionate consciousness increasingly gain control of the rudders of society. That's about all the time we have for today. For those that have made it this far, I'd like to especially thank you for listening and invite you to find a copy of Emerging Imaginal You on Amazon.com in either electronic or paperback form. Cover art and glowing endorsements for the book may be viewed at www.clevertowise.com. For now, blessings and have a great day. Once again, you can follow my regular Facebook posts by searching for hashtag CleverToWise. To sign up for my occasional blogs, to find out more about my book, or to participate in the free Blessings Co-op, go to www.clevertowise.com. For permission to use all or parts of this podcast, email admin@clevertowise.com. This has been a Clever to Wise production. Thank you.